Hello, travelers, and welcome to Go See, Do, Explore.
Here, we dive deep into the heart of travel, sharing hidden gems, unforgettable experiences, and the stories that make each destination unique.
Whether you're a seasoned traveler or dreaming of your next getaway, you're in the right place to get inspired.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley.
And together, we'll set the course for your next great adventure and discover the stories that make each place unforgettable.
It's time to go, see, and do more. Let's explore. A few years ago on the blog, goseedoexplore.com, I wrote an article of Michigan bucket list activities, like everything that you have to see in Michigan at least once. And I have to say, it was the first thing I've ever written that kind of went viral. A local radio station actually shared it, and then one of my friends shared it, which was pretty funny to see something that I had written come up from a friend of mine. So I thought this would be a good topic for a podcast to kind of go through the items on the Michigan bucket list. Of course, there were 28 items total on the bucket list. So I broke it up into three. It'll probably be three separate episodes today, focusing on the Upper Peninsula. These are in no particular order, I should mention. The first item on the bucket list is Tequamanon Falls.
Yeah, Tequamanon Falls is a Michigan classic, I'd say.
It is a waterfall near Paradise, Michigan. I read somewhere that Tequamanon Falls has the greatest volume of water of any waterfall east of the Mississippi, meaning that more water goes over Tequamanon than even Niagara Falls.
Maybe a density. I think there's more water going over Niagara, but per cubic inch or whatever. We'll have to check that.
Got to fact check me the first one.
But it's a pretty impressive waterfall. It's one of my favorites, too. It's really a sight to see.
And the state park has two separate waterfalls. There's the upper falls and the lower falls. And I can never remember which one.
Upper is the big and the famous one. Lower is really cool, though, too. It's got like a bunch of little waterfalls. Those surround an island. It used to be that you could only take a boat, like a rowboat or your own kayak or something like that, to the island. In recent years, the Michigan DNR has now put in a bridge that you can actually walk, and it's really nice, and it's kind of tucked out of the way, so it doesn't take away from the scenery at all. It's actually ADA accessible, so it's a really nice feature to get to a place that was much harder to get to before.
And it allows for you to actually swim in the waterfalls. I feel like Tequamanon Falls in that area is now one of, I think, maybe only two waterfalls in Michigan that you can swim in.
Nice.
The second item on our list is one of the most popular National Park Service sites in Michigan, and that is Pictured Rocks.
I love Pictured Rocks. I went there when, I don't know, I think I was in middle school for the first time. It's a unique place with the sort of sandstone cliffs and all these rock formations and Lake Superior, which if you haven't been to the Great Lakes, they might as well be oceans when you're there. It's just these massive bodies of water, but they're fresh water. And incredible views, incredible hiking, and incredible kayaking.
We went to Pictured Rocks. Well, I guess I should say you took me to Pictured Rocks for the first time before it was as busy as it is now. A few summers ago now, we took a kayaking tour through Pictured Rocks kayaking. That was an amazing experience.
Yeah, it was tandem kayaks with a rudder, and you were with a guide. They took you out on a boat so that you didn't have to paddle to the scenic part, which was really nice. And so you just paddle, your whole paddling time is just among the scenic cliffs with a guide. We had a rare wind from the south that day, which was the best case because when the wind is from the south, the wind goes over you because the land is south of you. So it was perfectly calm. Lake Superior can be very choppy and kind of dangerous. And this was not one of those days. It was just really easy paddling. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience that I'd recommend for anyone that's visiting Pictured Rocks.
It's also worth mentioning, if you're into hiking and backpacking, that the North Country Trail runs through Pictured Rocks. I think it's about 42 miles, and it is some of the most scenic trail I know of. Certainly, I would say the most scenic trail in Michigan. And it's really easy hiking. There are, I think, two big hills or so, depending on which way you go. And the rest is actually pretty flat. But it's beautiful. You're right along the cliffs and you got the water. It may be not quite as scenic as seeing it from the water, but it's still an incredible hiking experience.
The third item on our list is the Mackinac Bridge. And unless you're coming from Wisconsin, the only way to get to the Upper Peninsula is the Mackinac Bridge.
The Mackinac Bridge is one of the great things about Michigan. Maybe that feels silly to say if you're not from here, but we're proud of this bridge. It's been a long time since that bridge was super significant in terms of the world scene or anything like that. But when it was built, it was an engineering marvel. It's 5 miles long over very deep water. And before that, to get from the two peninsulas, you had to take a car ferry. And now you can drive. Every year, we walk the bridge on Labor Day. It's a one-day-a-year thing where in the morning, the Mackinac Bridge is shut down to traffic and people walk. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about that on another episode, but it's one of our favorite annual traditions and probably the time of year that I feel most proud to be from Michigan.
The fourth item on our list is probably the least well-known of any of the eight things we're going to talk about today, and that is Kitchity Kippy. It is located near Manistique, and it is a freshwater spring. So I feel like one of the things that makes Kitchity Kippy really cool is that the only way you can see it is by getting on a raft that is moved across the spring on a little wire. And then you get to hang out above it and you can watch the water bubbling up from the spring.
Is that raft, was that being replaced as part of that park project? Is that one of the
items? I did
items?
See that yeah. on the list.
It's really cool, though, because you, the tourist, get to do it. There's no guide or ranger or anything. The first time we went there, I feel like really not a lot of people knew about it. I think it's still true that not a lot of people know about it, but a lot more people know about it thanks to Instagram. It's become one of those places where just people go and take their photos so they can put it on Instagram or whatever, but it's really beautiful. It can get very busy because only a certain number of people fit on that raft, and so the line gets kind of long in the summer on really nice days. But if you camp nearby, like a couple years ago, we camped at Indian Lake, which is really close. You can go in the evening, or you don't have to camp, I suppose, but you can go in the evening and then there's no one there and it has really great light. Some of the best time to go, I'd say, is in the evening with that light and not a lot of crowds. So keep that in mind, too.
Number five on our list is one of the biggest cities in the UP, and that is Houghton.
I love Houghton. I'm surprised you put this on the list because I felt like when we were there, you weren't that into it, but I think it's grown on you. Houghton is just cool. It's small. It's not, I mean, big city for the UP is not necessarily particularly big, but it's on these hillsides. The cities of Houghton and Hancock on the other side are on these hillsides. It's the landscape you don't really see in Michigan because the Keweenaw has a geologically different situation going on. It's got this really ugly lift bridge, but it's cool. It's super cool. No one has these lift bridges that I know of. There's good restaurants, actually, and you're really close to Lake Superior, and the river there is nice. The other thing that's cool about Houghton, or I suppose it's Hancock, actually, but that's where the airport is if you want to go to Isle Royale. We're going to talk about Isle Royale a little later, but yeah, one of my favorite places. It's just absolutely unique.
And we camped nearby in Hancock. This was years ago now, but at McLean State Park. And McLean is probably one of the most scenic campgrounds in the UP. The campsites are on this cliff overlooking Lake Superior, and they've been having some issues with the cliff receding and having to move the campsites and things like that. But because of where it is and the way it's situated on Lake Superior, you can actually watch the sunrise and the sunset over Lake Superior in the campground. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's just really incredible. They have nice benches for you to sit, and it's hard to get to from where we are. So yeah. We haven't been back there. But definitely we need to. It's worth it. Well, that's half of our list. Before we do the second half, it is time for a wine break. So it's time for a wine break. Since this is a Michigan-centric episode, we definitely wanted to bring a Michigan wine. And so today we have Crisp from Two Lads. Two Lads is a winery on Old Mission Peninsula north of Traverse City. my favorite wine region in the world, I will say. There are great wine in other places, and there's wine in other places that's better than some of the wine from Old Mission. But in my heart, Old Mission is always the best. Two Lads really specializes in sparkling wine. They use the traditional method, similar to how champagne is made. And then they also specialize in really high quality red wine. And so it plays to our palates, definitely. Those are things we're into. We really love it. Crisp is a sparkling wine made in the traditional method, and it is a blend of grapes, certainly a blend of white. And actually, I don't know if it's only white. It might be red grapes too, like champagne is, but really great. What do you think?
Oh, it's always a favorite. Whenever we pull this out for a holiday or something like that, it's always a treat.
And so we are treating ourselves while we record this podcast. Okay, back to the list.
The next item on our list is Porcupine Mountains, which is located in the far northwest corner of the Upper Peninsula, very close to the border with Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's just about as far west as you can go in the UP without leaving Michigan. It's a remote wilderness. We went in 2020 because we were trying to find a vacation, given just the travel restrictions and not wanting to go to a super people-y kind of place. And that was not my first time there. It was Ashley's first time there. It was very busy, actually. I think a lot of people had the same idea. But what I completely forgot from when the first time I went there to the last time is just how rugged and remote that park is. If you like to hike, it's great hiking, but it is difficult hiking, especially for, I'd say, the eastern half of the U.S. I mean, it's just really rugged and challenging terrain.
Very steep.
Steep and rocky, and the trails, too, they go up and down. You certainly don't have the kind of climbing that you would have in bigger mountain ranges, like in the Smokies or in the Rockies or places like that. But it's just constantly up, constantly down, right? So you end up doing a lot of the same kind of a workout, even though a trail like that, you might go up all day. At Porcupine Mountains, you go just up, down, up, down, up, down. But it's just an incredible place.
When we visited in 2020, at that time anyway, they were saying it was the busiest that it had ever been. And there was not really any food or anything like that around there. So it was a very interesting experience.
Yeah, I'd love to know if that has changed, if the popularity has continued there and if more services have built up or if it's sort of gone back to the way it was. But that's one of the places I've done long-term hiking. I spent, I think it was 4 or 5 nights there out in the backcountry, and it was just an incredible place, a real gem.
All right, the 7th item on our UP bucket list is probably the most well-known of all the places in the UP. And that is Mackinac Island. We're going from one extreme to the other here. Porcupine Mountains, backcountry, backpacking to Mackinac Island. There are no cars on the island. I feel like that's probably one of the things that's best known about Mackinac.
Yeah, I'll get ahead of the controversy here. Is Mackinac Island in the UP? I don't know. It's an island. It's not in any peninsula. It's its own thing. We got to put it somewhere. So it's going with the UP.
I think it's technically in Mackinac County.
I think that's a good argument that it is in the same county here on our geopolitical podcast. It is in the same county as other places in the UP. Yeah.
But Mackinac Island is a very romantic place. There are no cars. You get around on bicycle or on a horse-drawn carriage. The Grand Hotel is also one of those iconic places that is voted one of the most beautiful places in the United States. There's 8.2 miles around the island.
That sounds right.
You can bike it, walk it. It's a state road. It's an M road, road that goes around the island. I love it. It's one of my favorite places. We talked earlier when we were talking about the Mackinac Bridge and walking the bridge every year. Our tradition is that we walk the bridge and then we take the ferry to Mackinac Island and we hang out for the day before taking the ferry back and hoping to beat some of that bridge closed traffic. We love the Chippewa Hotel on Mackinac Island. That's something I should mention. That when people think of Mackinac Island, most people visit during the day and then leave by the ferries. Mackinac at night is a totally different place. It's quiet. There aren't people in all the streets. I highly recommend that if you're planning time on Mackinac Island, you spend at least one night there.
Yeah, it's expensive, but it's worth doing. Maybe you can't do it every time you go if you go frequently. It's worth spending a night for sure. You know, if you're familiar with Mount Desert Island in Maine, I think that you'll see some similarities to Mackinac. Certainly, Mount Desert is a lot bigger and has a lot more topography and things like that. But in terms of the cottage-type homes, and even some of the names are the same. I mean, in truth, the same people that were hanging out in Bar Harbor, those very same people, those very same families were hanging out on Mackinac Island in the same time period. It's kind of the same sort of thing. And it's got the same sort of touristy side, too, to be aware of. But there is real authenticity running deeper than the tourism.
Next up on the list, we're going a little more industrial, and we're going to the Sioux Locks and Sault Ste. Marie.
Yeah. I'm excited.
I personally have family history there because during the Korean War, my grandfather was actually stationed at the Sioux Locks. He was a radar detector.
That's an aspect of the history that I didn't know about until Ashley told me, and then we learned about it more when we visited there, too. I love the Sioux Locks because I'm a total transportation nerd, and it's really fun to go there and watch the boats. I call them boats. I know that you're supposed to call them ships. I think it's more fun to call them boats. But yeah, you can literally see the freighters transit from Superior side to Huron side and vice versa, because the lakes are at different levels. There was a waterfall there, St. Mary's Rapids.
One thing that's cool when you visit the Sioux Locks is to take a Sioux Locks boat tour. So you actually get to take a tour boat through and experience the change in water level.
Yeah, it's really fun. And you can see, too, it doesn't actually use really any electricity or anything like that. I think there's some to operate the valves that open and close the lock. But it's all just, you know, the flow of water is what fills and empties the lock. It's really an incredible engineering feat. And Sault Ste. Marie is a really nice little town, too. There's some interesting things there. There's some kind of touristy things there, too. But you're in the UP. What's not to like?
It's one of the oldest cities in Michigan.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the oldest in the U.S. It's not quite as old as St. Augustine, but it's in that realm. It definitely predates the founding of the United States of America.
By
a long shot.
Next on our list is Whitefish Point.
I've been going to Whitefish Point for a long time. As a kid, I got really into shipwrecks for a while. As you know, all kids have their phases of dinosaurs or trucks or whatever. I had a shipwreck phase. And so there's a shipwreck museum in Whitefish Point that's pretty well regarded, and they do or are involved with a lot of active diving and discovery and recovery and things like that. You can see it all there. It's pretty great. And then there's a really, really ugly but important lighthouse. I mean, that lighthouse is hideous, and I'm a lighthouse fan, but it's a really important one because those waters are extremely treacherous, and that lighthouse has been an important guard against shipwrecks on the Great Lakes.
It's known as the graveyard of the Great Lakes, the area around Whitefish Point. The last item on our list is one of the few things left in this list that I have yet to do, and is, some would say, probably the biggest item on this list. It is Michigan's only national park, and that is Isle Royale.
I feel like I'm going to tear up talking about Isle Royale. It's incredible. I described Pictured Rocks as a one-off, but Isle Royale even more so. It's in the middle of Lake Superior. It's closer to Canada than to the U.S. mainland. It's certainly closer to Minnesota than it is to Michigan. Don't tell them. Although I think they know.
They know and they're not happy about it.
It is a pristine wilderness. It is an incredibly unique biosphere where there are wolves and moose, but not bear, which is fairly unique. And there are lots of other unique aspects about it. The backcountry hiking, the backcountry paddling is amazing. There are views, there are sights, there are mosquitoes and black flies, of course.
It's the UP. What else do you expect?
Yeah, there are mosquitoes, mainly in the late spring, early summer, and black flies in August is the pattern. But it's hard to get to, which makes it special. And it's the only national park, I believe, the only national park that actually closes in the winter because of access. To get there, you either take, there are a couple of ferry options. The National Park Service runs a ferry out of Houghton that takes, I think, about 6 hours one way. There's a private company that runs a ferry out of Copper Harbor. It's a little closer. I think it's like 4 or 4.5 hours. The best way to go, it is the most expensive, but the best way to go is by plane. You can fly from Houghton County Airport in Hancock in an amphibious plane. They'll land you either in Rock Harbor or in Windigo on the water, and then you can fly back, vice versa. You take off from the water, land on the runway. And so it's an incredible experience. Even that is an incredible experience. There is a lodge too, I think run by Zantara, just like all of them. That's something we haven't done. I haven't done something I would like to try. It just is a different thing to do. You gotta go. You just have to, words fail sometimes. You just have to experience it. I hope that someday we go and then we can do a whole podcast about how incredible it is, because yeah, it's just an incredible place.
So I think that wraps up our 10 UP items on my Michigan bucket list.
That was fun. I want to go to all those places right now. Well, maybe not right now. It's a little cold.
Yeah, UP in February is not warm and sunny.
I want to go to all those places in summer. Can we do that? It's time for our travel tip. This week, we're going to talk about making the right transportation choice for your destination. What do I mean by that? I think a lot of us are in the habit of, when I travel, I usually rent a car, or when I travel, I usually use rideshare. And just one of the things that we try to do for purposes of saving money, but also for purposes of having the best experience, is we try to think about what's right for the destination that we're going to. And so one option you have, of course, is to rent a car, a very traditional sort of choice. I think that choice makes a lot of sense. If you have a lot of driving to do, or if you're somewhere where there's not really other good transportations to get from place to place, and then renting a car usually makes sense. We also rent a car sometimes for road trips. You know, our cars are fine for road trips, but a lot of times I'd prefer not to put the miles on them. And so renting a car can be a good choice in those circumstances. One situation that renting a car is probably a bad option is if you're somewhere where parking is difficult and or expensive. That's a really important thing to think about. You might want to consider other options, shorter options, like maybe renting a car just for a day. When we were in California last year, we used Zipcar, to service that you can subscribe to, and then you're able to rent cars by the hour or for a day, and usually ends up being easier than a traditional rental process.
You don't have to go to the airport to pick it up or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. You just find it usually in some parking lot. We have that subscription and we use it when we go to big cities. If we need to get out of town, like when we were in San Francisco and we wanted to go to Sonoma, Zipcar was the way to go. Another thing you should not overlook is public transit. I know that especially in the United States, public transit can have kind of a bad reputation, but you really should look at how it works, understand it, know whether it's effective or not, and consider using it. You can, one, save a lot of money, two, not clutter up the traffic grid potentially if it's like a train or something like that, and three, enjoy your transit experience because you're not having to drive and figure out where to go and what to do and all that. There are lots of options to figure out transit. You know, most cities have apps. A lot of it will be on a tool like Google Maps. You can just select that public transit option and it'll tell you what to do. And you should not rule it out. You really should consider it. A lot of public transit authorities will also have day passes or week passes, things like that, where you can get unlimited rides. When we were in Lisbon last year, we actually bought a Lisbon card that got us free or discounted admission to all sorts of things. But one of the things that got us was free public transit while we were there, which was really terrific. And we used it to get to Sintra. We got to Sintra without paying for anything because we had that card.
I will admit that I'm not the biggest public transit fan, and I really don't the crowded trains and things like that. I prefer some of these other options, but I will grudgingly use public transit on occasion.
Yeah. She's going to get better at it soon, I think. Another thing you should consider is taking a tour. Now, there are good tours and there are bad tours, but I think both can serve your purposes here. Of course, a good tour will get you from place to place and so much more. But a bad tour, what I mean by a bad tour is like the big bus that's going to take you kind of from shopping mall to shopping mall. Is if you can use it for your purposes and ignore whatever it is that they want you to do, then great. Like that can work really well too. When I went to Los Angeles, I took a tour and it was pretty much all day. And what was really nice about it was that we were able to get place to place in LA traffic, and I was able to see a lot of stuff, and I didn't have to worry about it. And so definitely recommend that as at least an option worth considering.
We also took a tour from Porto, Portugal, to the Douro for a day. And the tour guide made all the reservations that lunch was included, and the wineries were, the tastings were included, and we didn't have to figure any of that out.
Yeah, we even got to ride on a typical boat.
That's right. I forgot about the typical boat.
Yeah, no, that was a good tour. That was a good tour. We really enjoyed that one. And we were just talking about our Azores, too, is another one that was really exceptional. Taxis and ride shares are pretty common. Can be very expensive, of course. You just want to think about weighing the cost of taxi and rideshare versus weighing the cost of renting a car, including parking and things like that, for what you want to do. Sometimes, like when we went to Austin, we did rideshare, even though Austin is kind of a driving city, but our needs for transit were pretty limited, so we were all right doing that. And just, you know, you just want to make that calculation. The other thing I want to say about those is the ethical issues around rideshare are pretty important, and everyone needs to make their own decisions on what's right to do, but you should be aware. I'm going to say this, don't just go use Uber wherever you are. You really want to understand the local economy and what rideshare you should be using.
In Portugal, we used Bolt a lot, and it was very inexpensive.
Yeah, Bolt was good. And then I know in Spain, they had one called Free Now. Essentially a way that taxi services could participate in rideshare. That, I think, is a solution to a problem. I'm not here to take an ethical stance on what you should or should not do, but understand the ethics around rideshare so that you can make an informed decision. The other thing I want to mention is, you know, there's all those scooter rentals out there. I did this the last time I was in Austin, and it was the exact same price as taking a Lyft. So, like, it's fun, sure, but I don't know. Like,
if you're more than one person, it's probably not going to work out in the budget for you.
Yeah, or, I mean, maybe different cities are different, but the other thing I want you to keep on your radar is walking.
Never heard of it.
So we're from a place in the world where people don't really walk. And I know those of you that live in big cities, this is just, what do you mean? Of course you walk places. But walking around in a place that's new to you, that you're getting used to or learning about, it's really a terrific way to become more accustomed to it. You drive around, you don't get to see the things that you see when you walk.
I don't know. We saw all those I Heart New York stores from the Lyft from the airport. True. I don't know what you're talking about.
True. Yeah. Watch our video. And then, you know, this is something we've never done, Ashley and I, but I see a lot of those bike rentals, like kind of like the scooter rental, but it's a bike. And that's something that I've been thinking about. I don't think we've ever had a trip where that really was the right choice for us. But under the right circumstances, I could see that being a really nice thing to do. So all this to say, think about your trip, think about what your goals are and what makes the most sense, and then be open to any of these possibilities. And if you've got other options that I'm not considering here that we're not talking about, yeah, we'd love to hear from you and let us know how you like to get around in cities or in the country or whatever. That's all for today's episode of Go See, Do, Explore. Thank you for joining us and sharing in the wonder of travel.
Keep the spirit of today's adventure alive by checking out our blog at goseedoexplore.com for even more travel inspiration.
Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you listen to your podcasts. It really helps fellow travelers find us and join our community.
Until next time, keep exploring, keep dreaming, and keep traveling by any means necessary.
I'm Christopher.
And I'm Ashley, bidding you farewell and happy exploring.